Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
Is the universe inherently meaningful or meaningless? Is there, in your mind, evidence of purpose and genius in all that lies around us? And how might maths, chemistry, and the works of Shakespeare give us some sort of answers to those questions? Well, Benjamin Weicker is a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute in the United States and also a senior fellow at the St. Paul Center for Biblical Theology. He's co-authored this book, A Meaningful World: How the Arts and Sciences Reveal the Genius of Nature, and it's quite interesting. Ben is with us now. Ben, welcome to Open House.
I am so honored to be called from the other side of the world to speak with you.
Well, I think this book that you've put together is really quite fascinating. It's interesting, you know, I remember hearing about a popular personal development program a few years ago, and the great crescendo to this conference came on the very last day when all the attendees at the conference were told that the world was meaningless and that that basically left you free to create your own meaning. That was the motivation, I guess, which was a little bit depressing in my mind anyway.
It would, yeah. Oh, my goodness.
It's quite an abrupt change from what has been believed throughout the previous ages, though, isn't it?
It is, and it's not a good change, as I think it affected you is the right way to be affected. Who wants to learn that the universe is actually meaningless so that you can attempt to create meaning when you really know that it's a foolish enterprise? If there's no meaning there, there's no meaning there, and you can't paper it over, you know, that's sort of humming while Rome is burning. Yeah, that's an odd thing, but, you know, it's entered mainstream philosophy.
Yeah, how have we gotten here? How has it entered that mainstream philosophy?
Well, that's a complex story. I can kind of bottle it. In the Renaissance, a notion arose from recovery of some pagan texts from an ancient philosopher, Epicurus, a Greek philosopher, who himself did not want God to exist and invented a world, literally, in which God couldn't exist, in which the universe itself was the result of random actions of atoms as they banged together, and that should sound familiar. It's pre-Darwinian Darwinism. That entered the Renaissance and the Enlightenment and provided a foundation for a kind of meaningless cosmos. That is, the cosmos doesn't have meaning like a Shakespearean play has meaning, with an author who writes it with a great depth and for a purpose to be a great drama. The universe is just a randomly contrived mess that happens to have, by accident, created us, but there's no purpose to it all. Well, that entered both people's understanding of physics, but also philosophy and everyday life, and it gave birth to a philosophical movement called nihilism. But as we quote in our book, A Meaningful World, many scientists today hold to this philosophical nihilism as the foundation of the cosmos. There's no reason why the cosmos is here. It's a big accident. Doesn't have any meaning. You can't get any meaning from it. And we're all going to die, and that's pretty much the story. So that's a pretty sad way for a scientist or anyone to approach life.
Well, we're going to explore some of the areas that you raise in the book, including chemistry and mathematics and, yes, even the works of Shakespeare, to show how you believe there is meaning in the world. In broad brushstroke terms, though, how can you come to suggest that there might be meaning actually to be discerned in the world as we see it?
We can leap ahead to accounts of the way that science works, and we argue this way. Look, science does work. That is, there's an intrinsic intelligibility to nature that scientists discover. And, in fact, there are layers and layers of intelligibility in all the sciences that are woven together in the kind of drama of the universe and in nature, even in our own neighborhood, that allows us, mere human beings, to discern this order. Folks, the universe is intrinsically intelligible. We don't, as scientists, make up the order. Otherwise, we'd never be wrong. You know, if the universe was meaningless, that is, unintelligible, science couldn't take place. You could never be right about anything because you could never be wrong about anything.
That's a good point. Benjamin Weicker is with us, co-author of A Meaningful World. Theopenhouse.net.au has the podcast. All right, well, Shakespeare, you've actually looked at his work and you've discerned four elements of genius in Shakespeare's writings, which you then kind of extrapolate broader than that. Explore that with us.
Yeah, and the reason we do it again is we're trying to get the argument about the relationship of God to science shaken up. And so we don't begin with science. We begin with Shakespeare, of all things. But we do it for a reason, because there's this old Saul, this old, I don't even know what to call it. It's really a fib, but, you know, hey, it's no great thing that evolution produced somebody like Shakespeare. Well, if you got 100 monkeys banging on 100 yes. typewriters for a million years, well, you'd come up with all the works of Shakespeare. So this act of genius in this great man Shakespeare, it can be easily explained as the result of chance. But our point is, okay, well, let's look at Shakespeare. You know, let's look at the way Shakespeare writes. And in fact, what we find is that it's impossible to reduce his works to any kind of randomly contrived device, like even a computer program, let alone monkeys.
They actually tried, did some sort of experiment in that, didn't they, at one stage?
They did. You know, and this foolish statement was around almost for, you know, 100 years before somebody just got some monkeys. Now, of course, they updated it. They didn't use a typewriter. They used a computer.
Yeah.
Well, what the monkeys did in a period of several months was almost nothing. You know, they jumped on the computer, they spat on it, and, you know, they did other things that I don't want to talk about, but they did produce several pages of S's and G's. What do we really find in a work of genius? Because we argue we find the same things in nature so that we can reasonably infer that nature is a work of genius with an author, in the same way that when we look at Shakespeare, we can reasonably infer that, say, Hamlet is a work of genius with an author. And we use four criteria. One is depth. That is, the universe isn't like go, Spot, go, or go, dog, go. You know, it's thickly intelligible. It's got a kind of readability to it, or we call it clarity. And by that, we mean it's understandable, oddly enough, for human beings. And now you say, well, of course, who else would it be understandable by? We're the only people that have science. But that's an amazing thing. You know, why should it be intelligible? Why should we be able to understand it, just not only on the surface, but layer upon layer, depth upon depth?
Yeah, even Einstein actually made a comment about that. I can't remember the exact quote, but it was something along the lines of, you know, the great incomprehensibility for this very, very life and universe is the fact that it's actually comprehensible.
It is, and we should be shocked and wonder at that. The third criteria is harmony, that in a Shakespearean play you find that aren't just parts and little snippets that could be produced by accidentally, you know, just randomizing, you know, in a letter-generating machine. These are parts of wholes, and they're integrally related to those wholes. In the Shakespearean play, you can take the smallest piece of it, like, say, to be or not to be. What could be a simpler, you know, six letters, six words, what could be simpler? You know, a monkey could get that. But if you look at Hamlet and you look at the depth of what that means in the play, that's how you understand what it means and how it functions. And we argue the same is true in biology. It's not just a matter of banging out something on a DNA strand and boom, you got a cell. It's that every one of those little informational snippets in DNA is informational, is functional, is meaningful, only in light of the larger, vast integrated complexity of the living cell. And we end with elegance, that the strange thing in nature, as you find in Shakespeare, and we use this as an example in geometry, is that things are done elegantly in just the right way. You know, in music, when you say something is really elegant, it's not he played a lot of notes as much as that was just the right note at the right time.
Yes.
And that's how we experience Shakespeare. It's not the number of words. It's the right words at the right time and in relationship to the entire production and the beauty of the play.
Okay, so depth, clarity, harmony, elegance. They're the four elements of genius that we can see in Shakespeare's writings. And then moving that on then to something like mathematics, you mentioned before geometry. It's interesting, math has got to be probably one of the least liked subjects for high schoolers, yet it really is one of the most profound forms that we actually have in the world for helping us to understand the world. It is quite an amazing thing. How do you discern then the genius that we've just explored there in mathematics and their forms?
Well, you said it exactly right. Unfortunately, too many people get a bad dose of mathematics, so we try to give a good dose of mathematics. We go to Euclidean geometry, which is beautiful. And if anyone hasn't done Euclid's Elements, you should work through them because it's absolutely beautiful. But our point is this: when human beings developed mathematics, they weren't looking for mere survival of the fittest. Mm-hmm. Their intellectual goal was to find something beautiful and true. That is, this, regardless of whether it fed anybody or, you know, produced more offspring or made them run faster, what they were looking for is the beauty and the truth united in geometric figures and demonstrations. Now, that's a weird thing. Why is that a weird thing in relationship to science? Because human beings developed all these wonderfully complex and beautiful mathematical systems in abstraction, largely, from nature. And it was only found out later, sometimes centuries later, that, weirdly enough, they applied to nature.
They actually interpreted nature appropriately. And that therein lies the kind of great wonder of it, is that we can actually create these models that do repeatedly actually interpret the world for us in correct ways.
Yes, and even more, lead to all kinds of discoveries that we had no idea of before. They actually help you to penetrate further, and you're saying, well, wait a second, how could that be? I've just violated two laws of an accidental universe. Mm. It's like a key, an elegant key that I made that I suddenly find fits reality. Now, how can that be by accident?
That's one of the big questions that so many people have talked about, is that the inherent order of the universe, so that we can actually understand it by law, we can discover its laws, we can form mathematical equations that somehow actually relate to it. And actually, it is one of the great wonders of the universe, the fact that it has this inherent order at its very core.
Exactly. And what should strike us as even more wonderful when we push this point home is, we know the source of even that mathematical translatability isn't in us, because, I mean, you can make a myriad, you know, endless mathematical equations. Only a very few of them fit. All right, now, that's strange. Now, that's what we call a conspiracy.
This is Open House. We are talking to Benjamin Weicker, co-author of this book, A Meaningful World, How the Arts and Sciences Reveal the Genius of Nature, theopenhouse.net.au for the podcast. Okay, we've done Shakespeare, we've done maths. Now on to chemistry and the periodic table of the elements that graces most school and university science labs. There is a story behind the discovery, I guess, it is the discovery, really, of the periodic table, isn't there?
Exactly, and it's a beautiful story. Scientists cannot say that the universe is meaningless, that is, it has no intrinsic intelligibility, and then use chemistry to show that we were randomly contrived by the elements. Because if we look at the history of chemistry itself, every aspect of the science as it progresses violates every aspect of scientific reductionism. So we tell this whole story, and the basics of it are this. Chemistry began with a desire for beauty for its own sake. It actually began with the search for the beauty of gold. It didn't have anything to do with anything practical at all. Gold is the most impractical thing you can imagine. Human beings wanted to discover the order of nature. The very heart of the scientific spirit is the belief that even though I don't know it, there is an underlying, beautiful, intelligible order there if I just work at it. And that is the history of chemistry, and we go through the centuries and centuries, really, that it took to figure out that, hey, there's not just a sack of elements out there. There's a beautiful table which is intricately ordered and wonderfully intelligible, so that we know one thing. The universe was there before we discovered it. And its intelligibility is strangely amenable to our abilities to figure it out. Hmm. That, again, we argue, must appear as a kind of conspiracy of order. It's as if the universe were ordered not only so we could live in it and be scientists, but also find out about it.
Well, we've talked about those four elements of genius that we saw in Shakespeare's writings: depth, clarity, harmony, elegance. That word order has certainly come up a lot as we've talked about mathematical theories and how they actually relate very well and explain the world very well. And then chemistry, the order that we can discover there. So let's bring it back then to nature and the cell. It certainly leads naturally to that point. When you look at the cell, how do you see depth, clarity, harmony, elegance, things like that in the actual cell itself at a practical level?
Well, the first thing to stress in regard to depth is, and this is where we want to overturn the paradigm of how even biology is taught, even the way that water works in a cell must be understood in regard to that whole cell. And water is a biocentric compound, that it's one elegantly, peculiarly well-made for life. The odd thing about living things is they are readable, or they have a kind of clarity.
Mm-hmm.
Why should we, these large stumbling creatures, be able to find out how it is that we work, that is, our physical aspects work? Well, it's because, as we go through the history of science, we went through the history of chemistry, there is a kind of a direct relatedness to our abilities and the intelligibility of nature, both in chemistry and in biology. Of course, there is a kind of harmony here between the way things work on the smallest non-living level, that is, a protein itself isn't alive in the cell, but the cell is alive, and there is a kind of going back and forth between the small and the large, the overarching live thing, and the way that a protein works, and hence the chemical elements within a protein. Often in biology, you find this with even the most hardcore materialists noting the elegance of living systems. They are amazingly ordered in ways that just don't make sense in regard to random contrivance.
Mm. Very interesting. Now, I like to go and research religious movements and spiritual movements and founders and those people who are the key movers and shakers within them. And I, when the Dalai Lama came to Australia, the second last time he actually visited Australia, I went to go and have a listen to what he was actually saying. And somebody actually asked him, "Your Holiness, what is the meaning of life?" And he paused for a moment and he said, "The simple answer is, I don't know."
Well, that gets right to the point.
Absolutely, and the crowd obviously laughed along with him. It's interesting, though, that I guess we started this talking about a conference that actually says life was meaningless. You've then, I guess, explored the fact that at the very minute level, whether it's the cell or whether it's mathematics or chemistry, even the works of Shakespeare, there is genius around us. I hope this isn't too much of a leap to then take the conversation a step further, but just to end on this, Ben, how do you then look at this world and everything you've just explained, and how do you answer that kind of question of what is the meaning of life?
Well, when somebody asks that kind of a question, it would be like saying, well, what's the meaning of Shakespeare? My answer is always, well, let's go look at a particular play. And so when people say, well, what is the meaning of human life? We'll say, well, let's look what a human being is. What does a human being look like it's made for? Gosh, one thing about it is it's the kind of thing that likes to understand things for no other reason than it likes to understand them.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't we take that as our beginning point? And if we take that as our beginning point, why should we think that human beings are merely just another animal? Don't they look sort of like a kind of a spiritual creature? That is, a creature that goes beyond concern for food and has a kind of intelligence that can't be explained as merely animal-like.
Mm.
Well, then that sort of looks like a conspiracy in which the human being seems to be related to the universe in a way that the universe seems to be made to be understood by a spiritual animal. Well, then couldn't the universe itself, if we find meaning in it that we didn't put in there, can't we infer that the intelligibility, maybe we can even say wisdom, of creation, it leads us right to the inference that there must be some intelligent being that was capable of putting that wisdom in things to be understood by us. And if there is a being who acts like Shakespeare in relationship to his plays as a dramatic creator, then that would be the equivalent of a person, an author. You say, what is the meaning of life? Is like asking, what is the meaning of Hamlet? Well, why don't you read Hamlet and think about the author? That's the meaning. It's not a short answer, I admit.
But I like it. Ben, it's been fascinating to talk to you. I really do appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us on Open House.
Great. Thanks for asking me.
Yeah, it's Ben Weicker. Don't forget the podcast if you want to listen to that again. Theopenhouse.net.au is where you'll find it from Tuesday onwards. But Ben's book is called A Meaningful World, How the Arts and Sciences Reveal the Genius of Nature. It's through IVP Press.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.